all the people who never got to hear your teaching this past weekend can hear it again. His topic tonight is going to be, what is your emotional addiction? I'm going to turn this mic over to you, Diedrich Wolczak. Thank you so much.
Good evening, everyone. Once again, it is a true pleasure and an honor to be here and to spend some time with you. Hi, Ruby. Good to see you. Good to see everybody else. I trust the sound is good. The sound for a little while was absolutely terrible, but it seems to be okay now. Can I see some okays so we can continue? Okay, sound is great. Then we'll continue. Dov has a wonderful habit of calling me with some relatively short notice and say, why don't you come on? And say, okay, we'll come on. The subject this evening is interesting for me from a professional point of view, because we, as some of you know, we have a center in Costa Rica where we spend time with a very, very small group of clients, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 at the very most. And we work with a variety of issues. What is emotional addiction? Dove wants to get me to go right to it. I'll get to it, Dove. Hang on. Patience comes natural to those who trust, and I'm sure that patience comes natural to you. When we started doing this work many, many, many years ago, we first started working with chemical addictions, whether it was crystal meth. I hear a funny voice. crystal meth, cocaine, and other wonderful goodies, and we, like most other people, assumed that that was the issue. The truth is, of course, that we found out very, very quickly. It didn't take long at all to realize that the addiction had absolutely nothing to do with the chemicals. The chemical addiction is something that can be overcome relatively quickly. I have had a number of those myself. I used to smoke 3 packs of cigarettes, which is a lot of cigarettes, and I had a fairly severe chemical addiction to nicotine. However, I found that after a week of climbing the walls and going relatively insane, that addiction was gone. The same with alcohol. I used to drink myself absolutely silly every night until 3, 4 in the morning. And, holy spigot, the only thing I'm addicted to is love. I see it. the addiction to alcohol itself became more and more meaningless. And as we were doing the work and as we were spending time with our wonderful friends, we began to realize more and more that what we're really working with is something entirely different. And what we're really working with is an addiction to feelings. Now, that became, that is now our focus. We now see and are quite clear on that there's such a thing, and where does it come from? Well, the feelings, as the Course teaches us, I choose the feelings I experience. That in itself is a bit of a step for a lot of people that are not in the Course in Miracles universe, because they think that you make me feel that way, my kids make me feel that way, Sarah Palin makes me feel another way, and Barack Obama indeed gives me another feeling again. However, the feeling is, as we now know, and as we've discussed on previous Akin Gather evenings, the feelings that I choose are chosen for me by my beliefs about myself. And this is where we get to the addictive part of the feelings. The feelings that run my life, I mean, the beliefs that run my life, for example, are a number. One, I can be abandoned. Another, I can be rejected. Another, who is Sarah Obama? I like it. Another is I'm not supported. And recently, in the summer, I came with an entirely new feeling that I had never explored before. But it was a very powerful feeling that suddenly came up, and I did the work that we do and went back to where did that come from. And what I found was that feeling, which was so strong and so unusual and new to me, came from the belief that I shouldn't even have been born. Now, that is not a feeling I'm addicted to. It comes up very, very, very rarely. Feelings I'm addicted to are the feeling I get when I'm not validated, when somebody says something negative about me, when I feel, when I, my wonderful little ego believes that it's being attacked. That feeling I'm addicted to, that feeling comes up a lot. The addiction, of course, is lessened because we continue doing the work, but it is lessening. There's a funny voice that comes up. Do you guys hear that, or is that just me? I don't know what that is, but it comes up. So, you hear it. Okay. It actually threw me off a little bit. Could be my own echo. No, it was it's sort of like a Halloween screech. Might be in my head. That's probably where it is. The Holy Spirit has come across on an occasion or two, but it's never sounded like this. So maybe it is the Holy Spirit. Maybe the Holy Spirit has chosen to put on a little funny costume and make a funny sound, and it's doing that. So back to the feelings then that I'm addicted to, and at this point, I'm clearly addicted to the feeling that comes up when somebody criticizes me. It's a horrible feeling. I now know what it is, and I know how to take it back, and I very quickly do a forgiveness on it. And the forgiveness that we use is very simple. It simply goes like this: forgive me for believing that I need to be validated, and thank God that is not the truth. Forgive me for believing that your opinion of me says anything about me. Thank God that is not the truth. Forgive me for forgetting that my worth is established by God. It's unchangeable. I don't have to do anything. I don't have to get out and prove who I am. So that's how I deal with the addiction to the feeling of not being validated. Another addiction that I'm working with, emotional addiction, is my eldest daughter pointed it out the other day, and when she pointed it out, I wasn't clear whether I was willing to even look at it, let alone let it in as a potential, potentially being true. It might be an emotional addiction to this work. Now, that's something I'd like to look at with all of you, because I know that when I'm at the center, where I spend 6 weeks at a time and then come back to Vancouver, British Columbia, for anywhere from 10 days to 12 days or 14 days, a very short period of time, and then I go back again. But when I'm at the center, I feel phenomenal. I have lots of energy. I'm wide awake. I bounce out of bed at 5:30 in the morning. Life is good. And when I get back to Vancouver, where I do not have 6-7 hours of circles and sessions, but where there's long periods of time that I'm on my own, I tend to feel depressed. Now, I want to explore with you whether we're talking depression, addiction to the work, or whether it's simply a fact that as long as I give and receive love and I place myself in the position where I give and receive love, as long as I'm doing that, I will have lots of energy because I'm receiving the love. When I place myself in a position where that is not happening, where I have excluded the opportunity of giving and receiving love by being alone, either with my wonderful computer or just sitting and reading or just being isolated, I don't feel that way. So I'm going to hand over the... Nothing outside of us is needed. You're absolutely right, Dan. That is brilliant, and it's so true. However, there is such a thing as the line that comes to mind once in a while, fairly early in the course, that says that what does it exactly say? Salvation is not a solitary venture. And I have found increasingly that when I'm alone for long periods of time, I tend to feel differently than when I'm with people. I feel differently than when I'm giving and receiving love. I feel differently than when I'm in a circle. I've often said that if this was my last day on Earth, I would want to spend it in a circle. I'd want to spend it in an environment where giving and receiving love are automatic, flowing, full of joy. I don't particularly interpret it as a depression, Dan. It's more a very different experience. And I've been looking at that now for the 3 years that I've been traveling back and forth between Costa Rica and Vancouver. And I'm not sure yet. Maybe I'll open the floor now to whoever would like to jump in, who has an opinion. One thing I noticed in the last couple of times I was on, and it's another thing that I'd like to look at from an emotional addiction point of view, and that is that it seems that there are opinions at times that are made wrong in the room, and I would really like to encourage everyone to allow the fact that there is no such a thing as a wrong opinion. Recognize that every opinion is insane because it comes from a belief that we're not one. And of course, if I'm in in total oneness, I wouldn't have an opinion because I wouldn't need an opinion. The opinion comes from a belief that I'm alone, that I'm separate. So I would really encourage everyone, when you hear an opinion that perhaps doesn't agree with yours, and it happens to me all the time. I hear opinions, lots of opinions that don't agree with mine. I have learned to really do what the Course suggests at a very early stage as well, and that is to be willing to question everything I think is true. So I'm going to open the floor to as much input as possible. Let's make this a really interactive session where everybody gets to hear themselves, gets to hear others, gets to hear that what they have to say is perfectly wonderful and perfectly valid or equally insane as anybody else that has any opinion. As soon as I have an opinion, I'm insane. That's a given to me, and I don't have to worry about it. But I'm not going to tell somebody. The exact question is, how can we each individually and jointly look at emotional addictions that we have? I've laid out a few of mine, perhaps in a rambling fashion, and maybe I'll sum it up again. One emotional addiction I have is my reaction to invalidation. The feeling I get when I'm invalidated, when somebody criticizes me, I'm addicted to that. So I'd like to open it up now to whoever would like to speak. Okay, I see Kathy's question, and the question is, what would you feel like if you were in session with groups all the time? Wouldn't you want a break after a while? It's a great question, and the answer, strangely enough, is no. I absolutely love being in circles. I love being in groups. I love listening to people, because I know that every single person in the group is bringing me healing that I'm looking for, provided I'm willing to listen. Some of you know that I haven't had a holiday since 1993. I don't really need a holiday. What I do need to do is to continue to look at what I need to do is to continue to let in the truth, to accept the atonement for myself. The Course puts it so easy. Okay, I'm passing it on to
okay, hopefully my mic is working. Diedrich is asking if anyone wants to share to please just raise your hand, pick up the mic. If you don't have a mic, you can share in writing. There was a few questions here. I think that Marie asked, do you have a way to be in a circle in Vancouver? Laura Blue says, it seems to be to me that any kind of emotional addiction comes from an addiction to feeling guilty, which is an existential issue, the root of all evil.
Okay. Is the sound from my mic as bad as it just was from Dove's? Because if it is, we better stop, because we're going to do some serious damage to ears. And I'm still attached to my ear for some reason. Kathy, you said, I just did a fabulous conference last weekend, and I would love to feel like that and experience that all the time, but I don't think that is possible, is it? If that is a genuine question, then I would say, yes, it is possible. As a matter of fact, I think that that is your birthright. I really trust that this work, it will lead to a much more permanent state of joy than anything else I can imagine. There's another question from Love Poetess, and she says, I have often attracted addicts as man friends. I know I have a nurturing nature. I wonder if it's an addiction, addiction to addicts or to those who are needy. If that's the case, what change do I need to make? I don't know what your actual name is. I feel a little awkward calling you Love Poetess, but I'll go with it. Yes, that is an addiction. Zilma, you're definitely attracting something. How do you feel when you're with your addict man friends? That's what you need to look at. How do they eventually make you feel, quote unquote? Of course, they can't make you feel anything, but you're looking for the feeling that comes up with your addicted man friends. The other addiction that comes up within that relationship would be what you've already put your finger on, and that is that you need to be needed. There's something about an old belief that you have that if you're needed, then you're okay. So your worth, Zoma, would then be established by how much you're needed. And of course, if I have that belief, I'm going to be needed a lot because I need to feed that addiction. That is how I shoot up. The other thing that comes up in this is that eventually hanging out with addicted man friends is going to lead to rejection and to abandonment. How does that feel when that comes up, Zuma? That would be another part of your addiction. So there's a number of beliefs that I need to have in order to be attracted to addicts. It's not an attraction that I've ever nurtured myself, because I was an addict and I could take care of that myself. But it is part of what you may want to look at. In other words, the beliefs that you hold about yourself in order to attract these people are, one, I will be abandoned, I deserve to be abandoned. Two, I deserve to be rejected. Three, I don't deserve to be with someone who is for me, who is there for me all the time. Because as we all know, some of us from personal experience, an addict is not present a lot of the time. An addict has an attention which goes in a different direction than his or her partner. The partner becomes sort of window dressing. Reviewing past thoughts is meaningless. Well, that is one way of looking at it. The course actually would tell you that that is not exactly true. The course tells you quite lovingly that the past is meaningless, and that all healing is released from the past. And then it throws in the caveat, and it says, "But first, make sure you know what you made the past to represent and why." In other words, I had to go back into the past and reinterpret. That is what the work is about. Okay, I'm give to. Zelma, I would like you to come back and perhaps tell me how you feel about what I just said. Where can we take this from here? Okay, for those that apparently it doesn't sound anywhere else. So, what Zelma is saying is that she agrees with what I just said, that she agrees with all of it. She just doesn't know how to change it. She wants to, but she doesn't know how. And this again is where the course is such a phenomenally rich toolbox. I often compared it the course to nothing other than a toolbox. I also compared at times to nothing else other than a very brilliant manual on how to become a effective meditator. But as a toolbox, there's lessons in almost every page that would help you to change your beliefs, provided you're looking for that. So you do know how, because the tools are there. What is now lacking, Zelma, is perhaps a commitment to practicing the tools that the course offers so freely and beautifully and eloquently and intelligently and effectively. So what the work is that we do in your particular case would be to look at the feelings that come up. You're with an addicted man friend. He has stood you up. He's been rude. He whatever addicts do, it isn't pretty. The feelings come up, and then immediately you go to, okay, what does it say about me that he just did that? And you have to be honest. Don't do a spiritual mind. I almost said a four-letter word, so I don't know what the word would be if I don't use the F word, but it's a spiritual mind something, that, and you know what the word is in there. Don't do that to yourself. Ask, what does it say about me that he just did that? Okay, it says once again that I am not important, or it says that I am not lovable, or it says that I don't deserve to have joy and intimacy and closeness in my life, or it says that I could never attract a person who actually is available to love me, which means I'm not lovable. Okay, having done that, Zelma, then you have to do a very plainly stated correction of those beliefs, and that is very simple. Forgive me for believing I'm not lovable. And then you have to say out loud, thank God, that is not the truth. I made that up. And I don't know how old you are, Zelma, but you made it up in the first 5 or 6 or 7 years of your life. You made up the beliefs that now make you go out and attract addicted man friends. Okay? So it is a matter of very simply... it sounds simple, but it also requires a commitment to yourself. And maybe you need to look in the mirror and say, am I worth the trouble? Am I worth the trouble to spend half an hour a day going over everything that happened today, look at my feelings, what beliefs about myself chose those feelings, and then set out to correct those feelings, those beliefs? Am I worth that trouble? And again, the course seems to know who we are and what we're up to, because very early, I'm not sure what page it is, but Dov knows all these pages. He's utterly brilliant. It says that you know that who you think you are is not worth the trouble. That's why you'll give up. You are not worth the trouble. Well, thank God that is not the truth. Thank God that is not the truth. You are worth the trouble. As a matter of fact, the only purpose for being on this little planet of ours is to undo all these beliefs, because the beliefs stand between the truth and who I am. In other words, there's a significant section on the course that deals with idols. The course does not talk about beliefs as idols, but I throw them in there, because every belief I have stands between me and the truth of who I am. In other words, my beliefs are idols. The belief that I'm not lovable is an idol. The belief that I need something outside of me is an idol. It's very easy to see. For most people, it doesn't take a whole lot of work to recognize that money, prestige, a job, the right partner, that those are idols. It's not quite as easy to see that I chose them from a belief about myself, and that's really why the idol lives. That's the altar of the idol. So the belief I have about myself is the altar of the idol. I'll give the mic back to Zelma if she would like to add anything, or anyone else. Please, let's make this as wildly interactive as this medium allows us to be. Okay, there was a question from Dan. How to break free of the addictions? Well, it's the same breaking free from an emotional addiction as it is from a chemical addiction. There's an absolutely no difference because the emotional addiction has become chemical. Anytime I have a fear thought, for example, I'm sending biochemicals into my body. If I do that often enough, guess what? I'm going to be addicted to fear. The same with anger. All of us know people who seem to be angry more often than one would reasonably expect. It's many, many years ago, about 20 years ago, that I went and saw a family therapist with my then partner, and there was a lot of anger in our relationship. And I suggested to the therapist that, is it possible that one is addicted to anger? Whereupon he turned to me and said, you're either stupid or insane, and possibly both. No, it's not possible. If someone is angry, they have a reason to be angry. Now, all of us in the course have the incredible, there is never a reason to be angry. There never is a reason to be angry. Yes, What the Bleep indeed gives you a lot of information on the scientific background to where the course, why the course works. What the Bleep and Down the Rabbit Hole both are invaluable from that point of view. When they came out, both these movies, years ago, it was literally a scientific validation of what all of us have known to be true for a long time. And that is that. I choose the feelings I experience, and something repeated feelings that becomes addictive in itself. Anger is one. Sadness is another. I know people who are constantly sad. I mean, depression is another wonderful addiction. It's purely an addiction. There's no such a thing from my point of view, and I know that I stick my neck out and I usually get a whole lot of rocks thrown at me when I say that, but I don't believe in depression. I just don't believe in it. What I know depression is to me, and I get depressed. I used to get depressed profoundly, and now I get depressed profoundly very briefly. It is simply when I'm depressed, I have deprived myself of love. The Course is so clear on that, and it so lovingly states that. If I don't deprive myself of love, if I don't block love, if I let love flow freely, how on earth could I be depressed? It'd be impossible. So I don't see depression as an illness. I see it as a choice. Our organization, as you probably know by now, is called Choose Again, and Choose Again is one of those great, great toolboxes out of the course. My experience is such, and lovingly the Holy Spirit or my higher self or whatever you want to call it says, my brother, choose again. There's another way of seeing it. Choose again. I'm going to give the mic over to the room, and I hope that somebody will jump at the opportunity to share and teach. Can somebody give the mic to Kathy? She has her hand up. I don't know how to do that.
Hi, Karen. Can you pick up the mic?
Okay, in the meantime, we got a question from Dan, and he says, once breaking free of an addictive relationship, the feelings associated, how to stay free and not re-enter the same one or similar? Brilliant question. The fact is, if I do not change my beliefs about myself, I will re-enter into the same relationship. I have no choice. free choice in this work really comes down, from my point of view, to one thing only. The only choice I have is to change my beliefs. If I do not change my beliefs, I have no choice, because my beliefs are going to guide every decision I make. My beliefs choose every thought I have. And as most of us know, that our thoughts create our experience in this wonderful world. Therefore, if I don't change my beliefs, I have no choice. So I'm going to re-enter into a same relationship. I don't know how the age, the average age in the room, I have no idea, but I would imagine that most of the people in the room have gone through at least one or two relationships, but you have to gone through two in order to make this worthwhile. You may have noticed that there was a huge similarity between the relationships that you've been in. What is the similarity? The similarity is that I am attracting my beliefs. I can walk into a room and there may be 400 people, and I will be drawn to the people that have my beliefs, both male and female. That is not a gender issue. Bradshaw calls that the Velcro effect. He uses that example more in connection with abandonment, but he says that if I walk into a room and there's a number of people there and I have an abandonment issue, by the end of the evening, I will be with the people that have the abandonment issue. Okay, I see that Lord Blue has his hand. Okay, your question is a question. You talked about changing the beliefs. Is this really what the Course teaches, or is it rather the case that the Course teaches us to abandon all beliefs altogether? You're absolutely right. I know that I could find any number of pages in the Course that indicate that it is about changing a belief, but you're absolutely right that the Course teaches us to abandon the beliefs altogether. I find that a bit, at times, of a leapfrog. In other words, I can let it go, but I find it easier to let it go if I know what I'm working with. In other words, if I have identified the self I made up, and you know that in the Course somewhere it says that the self I think I am is a belief that can be corrected. So it doesn't just say to abandon it. It says that the self I think I am is a belief that can be corrected. That's what we want to work with. I'm going to hand over the mic.
Can you hear me now? Oh, goody. Okay. So, I've written out my query here. You know, I'm just. What am I? I'm your approach, Diedrich, and I'm, you know. So what I'd like to just offer right now is first, I was surprised when you approached negative thoughts as addictive, and it never occurred to me. When you first said that, I was like, oh, I can think of all kinds of positive thoughts or feelings that I'm addicted to. And oops, oh no, there's trick-or-treaters. I gotta go for a second. Sorry. I'm so sorry. So anyway, yeah, let's take a look at either my attachment to feeling fulfilled, and that comes in lots of ways, or my attachment to, you know, the converse, which is my attachment to incompletion. So I'm ready to go. I'll stop. You can talk.
Ah, so Catherine, why stop? Why not continue? Tell me a little bit today, for example. Give me one example where let's look at the first attachment, to the attachment to the feeling of being incomplete. Did that come up for you today? And if so, can you give us the circumstance so we can then walk through how I would suggest that may be healed? Are you up for this little process? Over to you.
Sure. Yeah, I can. Many ways. But the first one that came up was I run a coaching practice, and my days tend to be very full and busy and so forth. And this particular day, I did a lot of just errand running and, you know, really mundane, quote unquote, mundane things. And I just found myself having the thought repeatedly, even though there were moments of not this, but there were thoughts like, I'm not doing anything significant. you know, it's not significant to go, you know, have my car checked, and it's not significant to go, you know, here, there, or everywhere. So, you know, there's this attachment to this sense of significance or fulfillment or something like that when I'm not doing my thing, which feels kind of like being in your circles, I think, I have the story that, or the belief, if you will, that it's not as important, it's not as meaningful. And for sure, there were, you know, moments interspersed of, you know, sweetness. But, yeah, I tend to discredit days like today. I feel kind of anxious around it, like I'm not doing enough. I'm not being enough. I'm not alive enough when life is just mundane. So there you have it. Bye.
Absolutely wonderful. This is why I love circles, because this is how I'm going to get my healing right now. The question... Okay, please remember that I'm not working with Catherine, I'm working with myself. I'm not talking to Catherine, I'm talking to myself. But Catherine just gave me the opening to start working with myself. What I would do if I'm awake, and of course when I'm not awake I'm not doing anything, but when I'm awake, in this circumstance where you had a day where you were running around, you're doing all kinds of things, but what you were doing wasn't significant enough. Wow. What again establishes my worth? Huh. My worth is established by God. My worth is established by God. I don't have to do anything significant. As a matter of fact, if I think I'm doing something significant, I'm lost. There's nothing significant about my work. There's nothing significant or good or special about what I do. That is an enormous trap. And so I thank you for opening that to me, because I had forgotten that for about 24 hours, and I was feeling very, very insignificant. So thank you. I appreciate it. Forgive me for forgetting that my worth is established by God. It has nothing to do with what I do. I don't have to do anything. Back to anyone.
I just want to say thank you, Diedrich. This is, you know, it's sweet. And, yeah. So forgive me for forgetting. I mean, you just tapped right into a line from the Course in Miracles. So is that kind of, you know, how you approach this work? Is that, you know, it rings to, you know, one of the, and then forgive me for forgetting, you know, the truth in some way or another. I mean, I could really just sit with this for a long time. There's a lot in this. You know. Thanks.
That's exactly it. Forgive me for forgetting the truth. Forgive me for forgetting that I'm whole. Forgive me for forgetting that there is only oneness. Forgive me for forgetting that love is formless, abstract, and infinite. Forgive me for forgetting that there is only love and that love is the truth of who I am. That is the last step of the process. I tend to not go there directly. I tend to first go to the belief that asked me, or for the belief that chose the feeling of discomfort. You know the line from the Course that says, discomfort is aroused only to bring the need for correction to attend to my attention. So anytime I'm upset, it simply means I'm believing something. I foreshortened my own process now to anytime I'm upset, I immediately go to, well, what do I want to be right about myself? What belief about myself am I buying into right now? Thank God that is not the truth. Forgive me for believing that I can be abandoned. Forgive me for believing that there's something missing in my life, that there could possibly be missing something in my life. Forgive me for believing that something should be different than what it is. The response to that has to be out loud to myself all the time. Thank God that is not the truth. I made that up. I made it up a long time ago. Dov and I are almost the same age. He's a few years my senior. But I made all this shit up 65, 64, 66 years ago. I've lived with it for a long time. A lot of that has become ingrained. Those of you familiar with What the Bleep know that what has happened is that we have created neuropaths, which are very deep. They're very deep grooves. And it's time to dig the thoughts out of those grooves. It's sort of like running a bicycle. None of you are from Holland, so you probably haven't ridden a bicycle on a road where there's also a tram line. Well, once your tire gets into the tram line, it's almost impossible to continue. You'll fall over. That is what happens with my thoughts. My thoughts get into the tram line, and I fall over. And falling over simply means I'm not at peace. I'll hand the mic back to...
I have one more question, Diedrich, which is... I mean, I think I know the answer, but I always think I know the answers. So here's my question, is when you say forgive me, are you speaking to Holy Spirit, God, yourself, or just speaking and whoever's listening hears? Just curious if there's a context for that.
It's a very good question. I'm asking the forgiveness of myself because I did something. I chose a thought. I chose to activate a belief that made me feel less than joyful, less than joined, less than peaceful, less than loving. So I'm basically asking forgiveness of myself. It's sort of, you can extrapolate it to, I did something stupid and I'm asking myself to not be hard on me. Just let it go. Forgive me for believing that I should have done something different. And the answer always is, thank God, it's not true. It's not who you are. You made it up. So it is an interior dialogue, and you can. I don't think that the interior dialogue would take place without the Holy Spirit. As a matter of fact, I know it wouldn't, because if I just have a dialogue, a monologue with my ego, the word forgiveness is not part of that monologue. The word love is not part of that monologue. The word oneness is about as far from that monologue as imaginable. So, yes, the dialogue would be between my higher self and my ego. And this is where I get a little confused, and maybe other course teachers or students could get in there and help me out. But somewhere in the course, I believe it says that the Holy Spirit and the ego will never communicate because they one exists and the other doesn't. Don't know about that. Any opinions, anyone? So here's a question. Let's just pretend like we're in a circle and we're all having fun and we're all teachers and students to each other. And I just saw that Catherine, whom I've never met, but Dov indicated that we should talk, and obviously we are now. She said, well, she's pondering, and I said out loud, and she said, not yet. That is a wonderful moment in my mind where... Would that be from love or would that be from fear, Catherine, that you would not ponder out loud? Over to you.
My experience in that moment was wanting to be silent and really let the, you know, truth, whatever it is, to show up. So I didn't really, I could feel something coming, but I didn't, it wasn't happening yet. So that's why I said not yet. I don't know. Let's see. So I guess there was fear there that sitting in the silence together wasn't enough. My favorite. Yeah, I can find that. And what did occur to me in your question around, you know, the ego and the Holy Spirit never talk, where what was coming up was just... I guess in my language, Holy Spirit heart, I mean, the heart hears the heart, and that's the only thing that's real. And so from that place, I can find what you said. Over and out.
Last time, is Ruby still in the room? Yes, she is. Ruby, last time you brought up an issue, a feeling that you wanted to look at, and that feeling actually came out when it was you had an opportunity to speak out loud, and I heard a lot of fear or a lot of emotion in your voice, and we did a little bit of work on that. I was wondering if you've continued working with that, because that, of course, is the only way that I'm going to undo a feeling is by continuing to work on it. Any feedback on that, Ruby, or anyone else? Who at one time last week or before that when she had the opportunity to speak experienced a number of feelings that came up and we worked on it, and I was wondering if Ruby had been continuing to work on that, but in the meantime Ruby may not be in the room. This is true. Dan mentioned Dan's sibling, and I presume your name is Dan, but I have no idea. A little earlier, you wrote, "I don't know what the course teaches, but my experience that both are vying for being chosen." It's Helen. Okay, Helen. sometimes I really wish that is true. I find that the only thing that vies for space is my ego. I find that the Holy Spirit within me, the truth within me, the part of my mind that always knows the truth, simply waits. It waits quietly. It doesn't come after me to make a different decision. It really doesn't do anything. And of course, the reason it doesn't do anything, because as the Course teaches, it need do nothing. I need to step back and allow the truth. So I don't think they're vying for attention. I think love waits on welcome. The truth waits on welcome. I have to step back. I have to somehow say to my ego, okay, that's enough out of you for a while. I am now going to listen to the truth within me. So I'm going to create a little space within my mind, within my the wonderful universe that is my thinking, where I can actually start hearing the truth again. It's sort of like turning the volume down. Okay, I'm going to let Journeyman Dan take over.
The last time you talked, we had a very interesting discussion afterwards after you left the room, so you probably weren't privy to it. But it was very interesting the amount of reaction there was about the whole idea of therapy. And what was really being discussed. Oh, people are having trouble hearing me. Let me see if I try something here. Turn this up. And let me see if my volume is all turned up here. Yeah, my volume's turned up. Are we doing any better? All right. Okay. Sounds like we're better. Always good to hear that we're better. No better than what? All right. So let's get back to what's going on last week at the conclusion. So the discussion went along the lines that some people really distrusted therapy, and some actually even distrusted what you were bringing of some of your topics. And I think really what I was seeing the thread there of what was going on was basically that the ego is the one that's questioning, and the ego gets compulsively trapped in continuing to ask the questions over again. So therapy can get to be an exercise in self-indulgence. We can go on for a very long, long time. Because basically you're examining in the same area, and you keep finding many, many reasons what's going wrong, and now you need to improve it, and now you need to change it, and then you get caught in this whole spiral. And I know what you were doing is really just trying to interrupt that process and examine the beliefs and change the beliefs and move into a deeper space. And I find that that's really true of myself, is I really need to have the humility that I'm not going to figure this out. I'm not going to be able to do my problems. And the only time I ever make any kind of change or any kind of progress is that I've let go of the struggle to change, and I stop listening to the shouting insistence of the ego, and I drop into a much more quiet space, and I can pull back, and I can really see what's going on. And in those quiet moments, it's no longer a problem what needs to be done, or what needs to be given, or what needs to be said does happen. And it's the allowing for the space to change things. So I think therapy can be useful if you can name the belief that's driving you, but not get caught in strengthening it. And I think that was the concern in the room of people we were discussing, is that if they pay attention to the problems, they're going to strengthen the problems, whereas if they go to the place where the spirit resides, or the inner self, however you want to, whatever terminology you want to use, you can have a release that's quite unexpected. And I actually do see it's a tremendous wisdom from the Course's teaching that the ego and the spirit are not going to get into the discussion. For the spirit to get into the discussion with the ego, well, what happens then? It validates and verifies what is an illusion, and it strengthens the problems. And I think that was the basic attitude that was being revealed. There's a sense of fear that the process can, in and of itself, strengthen one in ego beliefs and end up chasing your tail round and round and never get free of it. So, and I'm sure you have ways of working around that, and if you would like to reply and discuss that, I'm willing to listen now. Thank you for the time. Oh, I wanted to thank you for one other thing. You gave me a really nice idea in your talk, that I'm always thinking of forgiveness in terms of actions with other people. I haven't really realized a lot of forgiveness is forgiving myself for false beliefs and having those beliefs and creating those beliefs. And thank you for that. That helped me with my process. So that's enough sharing for me, and we'll turn it back to whoever wants to speak. Thank you again.
Thank you, Dan. I presume your name is Dan. Dan the Journeyman. This becomes a political platform. Yeah, very good. I totally agree. If what we did would be to link a feeling or an upset to a belief and simply say, okay, there's that belief that I can be rejected again, yes, it would be strengthening it. You're absolutely right. That's why that is only the two more steps after that. And the step after that is forgive me for believing that I can be abandoned. So it's not just that recognizing the fact that I have that belief. That would be pointless. And I know a lot of people that have worked with us and that are very good, very proficient, very quick at identifying the beliefs and say, well, I did the process. No, you didn't. You identified the belief, but you did not do the forgiveness. And the forgiveness is where the work is. There are many people that know and that have a very firm belief that what the Course is about forgiveness. And the forgiveness is for myself, for believing that I could be anything other than an innocent child of God. For believing that I could be anything other than love. For a belief that I could be anything other than the truth or any other thing than how God created me. That is the forgiveness. That's and if I don't engage in that forgiveness, yeah, then I am indeed strengthening the belief. So a lot of newcomers to this work say, oh my God, this is a lot of work. I mean, every time I have to do this process. Yeah, you do. It's true. But think of how many times a day, 24 hours a day, my ego is busy cementing the beliefs that I made up a long time ago. My ego does not stop. My ego is continuously at work. It works when I'm asleep, it works during the day, it works constantly, day and night, 24 hours a day. Now, if I get in there, I think it was somebody said that we have 60,000 thoughts a day, which is a very exciting idea, but we have the same 60,000 thoughts every day. That's not so exciting. So if I can get in there and lovingly correct a thought, a correct belief, say, okay, forgive me for believing, I need support. I am always supported. I made up that I need support from the outside. I need made up a long time ago, and I remember the moment it happened. It's literally 62 years ago when I have had that moment of not being supported by my father. And I made up that I wasn't lovable. I made up that I needed support. I made up that the fact that he did not do what I thought he should do at that moment said anything about me, and I have to correct that. That same feeling comes up not anywhere near as often as it did a few years ago, but it still comes up from time to time, and it's wonderful when it does, because I now know that that belief, the belief that I need support from someone or something outside of me, prevents me from being in touch with the truth within me. In other words, that is one of the many barriers to love that I've made up. And as the Course teaches us so gently, this is not about seeking for love. This is about removing the barriers that we've made up. Any belief I have about myself, any opinion I hold, any time I have an idea that I think who I that I know who I think I am, I have another barrier to love. Yes, it's ongoing, but from my experience, doing this work 10, 12, 13, 14 hours a day removes barriers. It does not reinforce the beliefs, it does the opposite. And the other great thing about being in circles, and those of you that spend time in circles, is everybody pretty well knows what my beliefs are. And they can pretty well hear from my tone of voice, from what I look like at any given time. That's why I find this medium difficult, because I can't see your faces. I can't see the feelings, which normally I can. So I have no idea what's going on. I can see typed messages on the screen, which really don't tell me anything. Dove and I had a talk this morning about perhaps doing this again from Costa Rica, and we could do it through Skype. And I really said, no, I can't do it through Skype, because in Skype, Dove is going to tell me what the question is, and it doesn't work for me. I have to hear the question, because in the question itself, in the tone of the question, is the information that we need to work with together. Dan types in, a lot of people may not want to face the barriers to love that are present. It is a possibility, not a judgment. Absolutely. I don't think anybody would judge anybody that wants to hang on to their barriers, other than, what is it, the little sigh that the Holy Spirit lets out when I want to hang on to a judgment. There's no judgment on it from anyone else. It's simply, why would I do that to myself? Why would I want to be right about a judgment? Why would I want to be right about an opinion? Why would I want to be right about a trap that I built? And then he follows up by saying, it may feel uncomfortable. No question. No kidding. It feels extremely uncomfortable when I hit a barrier. It's literally like running at the wall and hitting my head and say, wow, that doesn't feel good. No, it doesn't. Anytime I want to be right, it doesn't feel good. I get a brief hit of adrenaline when I'm right, and God knows I know how to debate, and I get to be right in a debate. I used to win debates all the time. I would go to the other side of the room and debate the opposite point of view, and I'd win that one. It feels fantastic to the ego very briefly, but there's no love in that at all. There's no giving and receiving love. I'm handing it over to Catherine, or anyone else for that matter. This silence is delicious. It happens on occasion in the circle where we're just silent. We're just with what is, without having to fix it, without having to communicate. And again, that's easier, and I'm more familiar with that in a physical presence of others when we choose to be silent. There was one time in the circle a couple of weeks ago where we were silent for almost 3/4 of an hour. And the person who at that point really was hanging on to a point of view that he absolutely wanted to be right about, and we the counselors and myself that were with this person in the circle at that moment just created the space for him to be in it. And it was very interesting to watch what happened, because he got more and more uncomfortable, because he was so used to engage. He was very used to taking a position, but he engaged and challenged the position. And we weren't challenging it. We were just sitting there silently. And what happened, of course, that he started challenging himself, and he started looking at his belief and started moving it. I know that Catherine works a lot with Baron Katie's work, and the one question that that we've been using for years, way before we ever heard of Baron Katie, and therefore we know it's absolutely true and an incredibly valid question, is this true? Is this true? Is it true that my father needs to support me? No, I made that up. That ties back into the astonishing definition of betrayal that the Course provides us with, and that goes something like this, and again, Dove will have to verbatim up in a second, but it's something like this: no one can but fail my idea of him, and there's no betrayal but of that. In other words, I cannot be betrayed, but I made something up. What is my idea of my partner? I made up that my partner should not be a drug addict. We'll go back to the original discussion. But apparently he should, or she should, because that's where my healing is. That's why I attracted her. I'm going to hand over the mic to whoever would like to share. There we go.
Oh, hi, Dietrich. I stepped away for a minute, but I think that you wanted to know if any feelings came up in me since the last time we spoke. And actually, I feel a great release. And I don't know if it's... I think it was a whole interactive process, because I have been studying the Course for a while, and though I have been studying, I never looked at this. It was more of a suppression. And speaking about it, I was kind of surprised that I had so much emotion still attached. I thought I had gotten over a lot of this stuff, but it was very healthy, actually, to go through it. It took about a week, and also with many friends in this room. There was a great healing. I still get choked up. It's personal, but it definitely moved in the right direction. And for me, it's always, as things come up, it's always inviting the Holy Spirit to walk through it with me. So I want to thank you.